Hello and welcome to Sunday Messages with Fairmount Friends Church. We're so glad that you are joining us. You can find out more on www.fairmountfriendschurch.org. Here's Pastor Andrew Hale. Well, hey, as we dive in, I just want to take a moment. If you're a part of the missions committee, would you just wave your hand or stand? And we just want to thank you for putting on last week and being a part of making last week happen. So if we could, let's give a round of applause to these folks for their work. To have Doug and Holly and their family come and share and to stay afterwards. And so if you're able to be a part of that and stay afterwards with the lunch, thank you for staying. If you were not able to be a part of it, wanted to be there, thank you for having that heart. And even if you're like, man, I wish I would have gone, or man, I do have interest, and I'm not sure if I can go, but I can give financially, or if I don't have any money, but I want to go, let's have a conversation about that. And so you'll find some spots at the back to be able to sign up and to be a part of that. No pressure, but take a chance. Put that out there. Are you willing to say yes to something that maybe is different than what you're used to? And so even as we look at missions and we look at this missional mindset of outside of ourselves, even outside of our family, and looking at even to the nations abroad, right? So often we think of missions, at least I do, and I think of, you know, 6,000 or 60,000 miles away, and yet it's struggle sometimes to go 60 feet to talk to a neighbor or 6 feet to talk to that person at the grocery store. Are we willing to do that? To know that we're planted here. And that's where we're headed this morning, is some thoughts coming out of the book of Titus. And so Titus is where we've been the last few weeks, and we're going to actually continue to hang here in this book. And so last 2 weeks ago, Pastor Brock dove into Titus chapter 2 and got about two verses in. We're actually going to go back to Titus 1 and spend some more time there, really looking at who are we as people, and can we pull anything as this book talks about church leadership? Is there anything that actually applies to me if I'm not a part of a church leadership position? Is there anything that I can apply to my life? And so if you would travel with me to Titus, and go ahead and throw that picture up there, Eden. So a couple more shots of Crete. And Crete is an island off the coast of Greece. And I'd be willing to go hang out there for a little bit, maybe more than a little bit. Spend some time by the water, spend some time just walking down the streets. I'm not one to spend much at shops, and so I would probably let Jessica do that, or whoever we're traveling with, enjoy that moment, and I'll just be present in the moment. But so we're going to be looking at Crete and spending some time here. And Crete, as beautiful as it looks today, and I'm sure it looked beautiful then, it just looked different. We're looking at this place and learning, as Pastor Brock shared a couple weeks ago, that the name Cretan, is that a term that you ever used affectionately for a sibling before? To say, hey, I really think you're just a Cretan. With a smile on your face? Nobody? A Cretan is somebody who was just a liar. Somebody who was just known. That's just what they did. And as we unpack that a little bit, I've done a little bit of reading and learning that the island of Crete, as they were a part of Greece, there was this pantheon of gods, right? And there's these different people that they would look to for guidance and who they would worship and sacrifice to. And on Crete, so often it was Zeus. Anybody heard of Zeus, the lightning guy, right? He's the guy that you kind of appeal to. And so Zeus was this god who was a seducer, and he was a trickster, and he would cut out on this place to go be with this person, and he would just be in all these different places. And so they wanted to be like Zeus. And so they would be tricksters, and they would be cruel, and they would be willing to step away and out of whatever their commitment and covenant was to go and do whatever they wanted to do. And so as we're diving into some of this aspects of life, and as we look at that contrast, okay, if I'm living and following this God, okay, that's a good thing. We want to follow whatever higher entity that we believe in. To actually turn that and translate that to Jesus, is that someone we're willing to follow? And so as we're looking at this standard of living, and we're going to unpack what it means to not get into this legalism and following these steps and these rules, and instead get into this higher living, this higher conduct and way that we could live and to aspire to, not in a sense of like obligation and I'm never going to amount to enough, but to say, hey, I've got a standard that I'm being held to. And as a church body, are we willing to pursue and encourage and challenge one another to say, hey, this is where we're headed. And maybe we're not hitting the mark every day or every moment, and yet this is what we continue to aspire towards. And so the island of Crete, Paul was very strategic when he told Titus, who was a Greek Christian, and so he was familiar with the culture. He was familiar with the cultural implications. He was familiar with the different lingo maybe that existed. And we're looking at what does it mean when who is hanging on your leadership? You know, when you look at your life, is anybody that is a part of your life, are you leading them? Maybe you're a father, and so you've got a spouse and children. Or maybe you're a boss and you have employees who are hanging on your leadership literally by a paycheck. Or maybe you're a part of the church leadership and you've got folks who are following you and we're trying to craft and mold and shape and encourage a group of people. Pretty easy, right? Trying to lead people, guide people through life, try to answer questions and how do we handle this and what do we do with that? And anybody, if I say easy, raise their hand, agree, thumbs up. I'm seeing some shoulder moves of chuckles. I would take that as a no. But this Paul guy, he knows this. He knows that people are fickle. He knows that the people of Crete are these followers of Zeus. And so he strategically places Titus, and then he places Titus on Crete because Crete is this harbor city, this location where all of these places around the world are coming together, and then they're going somewhere else. They're catching the people and sharing this message. And then they're going off on their lives, right? If you think about when Jesus would go and preach, right? He had these 12 followers that he specifically called. And then he would go and preach, and people would be converted. And, you know, there was 3,000 added to their number that day. But did they all start following Jesus in intimately ways? Some of them did. They would follow him around, and they would live outside the cities that he was in, and they would just wait in anticipation of his next speech or his next miracle. But they weren't following him in every single moment of the day. They had their lives to live. They had families they were responsible for. They had things that they had to do. And so in the same way, as we are followers of Jesus, can I commit my life to him without then just leaving behind everything that I have? He is calling us to do that in an interesting way, but not just to forget and cast aside that which is good. So a quick overview of the book of Titus. And we're looking at each of the three chapters, just a quick synopsis as we really dive in here into chapter one. So we've got an image that kind of captures this description. And so in the first, and that might be a little small, but you get the idea, of the first four verses is Paul laying out who he is and this contradiction, as we've described, of that God does not lie and the opposite of everything the Cretans know because they're followers of Zeus, right? And so instead, they're going to now become followers of this God who does not trick. He is straightforward. He is clear on who he is. Moving into the rest of chapter one, it lists out a bunch of Titus's tasks. And so as a leader in his community, he is to carry out these tasks and to appoint leaders, to confront the liars and the false truthers, describe what a Christian leader is to exhibit. Chapter 2 is describing the new household. And so as Cretans, this was the way that you lived. This was the general normal mode of operation. And so now could it be that there is a new way to do that? A way that actually brings life instead of secrecy and swindling. And then chapter 3, the new humanity. And so he's laying out this argument where instead of now we have our home and we protect our home and we don't talk to anybody, we just do our own little thing, same way in our community. Are we creating this utopia where Jesus is present and we get to live in the ways of Jesus? That would be really cool and something we are kind of trying to do, but to do it in our communities today. This new humanity of this is how we're going to live, and we're going to live with the people. We're going to live amongst our people. We're going to live in the world, not of the world. To become productive, healthy citizens in this society. So the gospel about Jesus needs to prove its redemptive power in the public square if it is really going to transform this Cretan culture. And that's not going to happen through social upheaval or by Christians cloistering away from urban life. The Christian message is going to be compelling. It'll be compelling to Cretans when Christians fully participate in public life, right? That we're involved, we're present, we're after things that they're after too, and we can rub shoulders and be with one another. And after a closer look, maybe our neighbors start to notice there is something different, that there's a totally different value system that we now live by as we're devoted to a totally different God. So jumping into Titus 1, we're going to be in verse 5, and we'll be moving through the rest of the chapter. And looking at verse 5, when it talks about setting a bone, it talks about in that instance of we're resetting something. We're going to cause something to become set in how we operate. And so as we described, it's kind of like the same language of if you're setting a bone, you're making right that which was so that we can be present in it. It is now able to operate as it was supposed to function. We have this practice or this policy, right? Ever in life, and there's something wonky going on in your marriage or something wonky going on at home, and we got to have a family meeting and just talk this thing out. I know for Jessica and I, usually we have time to talk at about midnight, maybe at 6 in the morning, depending on if we wake up to our alarms or not. That's me. So we've got this way that we ought to live, and this rub, and we're going to try and dig into it, this rub of how do we uphold expectations without then living to the point of detriment to our own health when it comes to these expectations. So the other thing that Paul is talking about is this corruption that exists. And so even as we're saying, all right, we're going to set things right, what needs to be set right? So he talks about, and starting in verse 6, he says this contrast, but he's talking about the corruption and we have to select leaders carefully, and otherwise a mess comes about. And so reading in verse 6, and you can find it in your pew Bibles or on the screen, it says, an elder must live a blameless life. He must be faithful to his wife, and his children must be believers who don't have a reputation for being wild or rebellious. A church leader is a manager of God's household, so he must live a blameless life. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered. He must not be a heavy drinker, violent, or dishonest with money. Rather, he must enjoy having guests in his home, and he must love what is good. He must live wisely and be just. He must live a devout and disciplined life. He must have a strong belief in the trustworthy message he was taught. Then he will be able to encourage others with wholesome teaching and show those who oppose it where they are wrong. Again, I ask, sound easy? Right? How in the world am I supposed to do all these things? Especially if you imagine yourself as a Cretan, and I do all these things this way, and now I'm supposed to do all of this, and I'm going to be made fun of, and I'm going to have all these people who say, what are you doing? That is just not who we are. That's just not how we do things. Why in the world are you doing it that way? It doesn't make any sense. That doesn't actually benefit you, especially where you're going to continue to be swindled by people, and you know it. And so often what we find is there's these groups that pop up of argument. And so in here in Titus, it talks about circumcision. And circumcision is that process where, there was this law, right, about how to act as a Christian. There's this law that these people who, circumcision is the easy example, but he talks about there's these purification rituals and there's rites of being able to even enjoy a meal and what can you eat and what can you wear. You're not supposed to more than wear clothing that's woven of more than two, or it's supposed to be one fabric, right? It's supposed to be made of one linen. You're not supposed to have something that's interwoven with two. And all of these different rules that God had set in place because the people weren't getting that he just wanted a relationship. And so in Leviticus, we get all of these rules, 666 rules, I think it is, that they laid out. Interesting, now that's the number. The response that God gives because the people won't reply is law. And so now that he is offering grace through Jesus, even though they are understanding that Jesus is different, there's still this understanding and expectation from the followers here in Crete that they are to uphold the law. I mean, that's what you do, right? When something's wrong, something's been done, you make a law about it. You fix it. You address it. And Jesus says, that's a way. That's the way that we have operated. But I've got a new way. And it's going to bring a whole lot more life to you than you think. The Christian life isn't about all these rules. So often that as a church, we've not done ourselves favors. Big C and little c. We have churchy expectations. Have you ever gone to do something or entered into just a new thing, and after you entered into that thing, it just turned out there was so much more to it than you thought, so much more than was presented. I saw that nod up there. Right, so maybe, for example, you're like, all right, family, we're going to go on a vacation, and let's do this looking, and right, look it all up, or pull it up on the phone, look at all the apps, and whatever one is your preferred way. And you know, have this conversation, and kind of through as you're talking with family or friends, like, hey, we would love to go on a vacation. We're thinking about maybe going to here, or maybe we'll go to Crete, or maybe we'll go to Kentucky. Contrast there. Right? And you get into the space where, hey, you know, if we partnered together and we paid for this place, and really all you got to do is sit through this presentation, and then you can go and enjoy a vacation, right? There's a bit more of a commitment to a timeshare than maybe you realize when you just say, yeah, I'll pay an X amount, and we'll go vacation there. I was recently traveled around and spent some time with Kurt Presnell in his sprayer, right? And in the front end, and I grew up on a farm, right? I grew up, and I was in combines and tractors, and actually, my dad never let me in the sprayer, but I never rode in it. So this was my first time. It's a little different. But at first glance, right, you know, you drive a car, you just turn it on, you put it in gear, and you go. Why would a tractor, why would a combine, why would a sprayer be different, right? You get in, and you turn it on, and you press the button to go, and then you pull the lever to stop. Easy. And then you get in there, and you realize that you got to activate the arms, and there's buttons over here, and there's buttons over there, and there's a screen here. Oh, there's a screen with buttons. And then you got the GPS handle now, and you've got this, there's no pedals. Well, there might be kind of pedals, but my dad never used them. And so we've got this bar that makes us go forward and backward, right? And we got this whole new thing that there's just so much more going on than we would initially think. There was an event that in my last job, I was asked to go and speak at, kind of a roundtable discussion. And the prompt was simply, hey, would you come and share what it is that you do to include the Bible when you're using and developing teen or youth curriculum, right? If you're going to be writing something in the church, how to use the Bible to be part of that. And so I go, all right, yeah, sure, I can do that. I wasn't that casual about it. I was like, let me pray about it, which is like the Christian way to say no, right? And just being honest. And so I agreed to go do this event and had to drive to get there. It was supposed to be an overnight thing, and you know, they had some other aspects to the weekend planned. And so I went. The first thing on the docket, of course, was my event, my thing. And so I'm like running late because that's what I was used to be doing. I do a lot better about that now. But I show up to this event. They have a sit down. It's not a big group, just a small group of people are sitting in a circle. And I share my thoughts, and they give their thoughts, and they give their thoughts. And we end our time. And they say, all right, let me show you to your room. So I go up to the room, and they've got like, it's like an older home type place to stay, and so they've got like the skeleton key type looking keys for the room, and it's this individual bed with, you know, a lamp. I don't know what I was going to try to say. A lamp was in the corner. Really setting the scene here for y'all. And put my stuff down and thank her for showing me where my room is, and I sit down on the bed, and I just have this sense I'm not supposed to be here. And I'm like, they asked me to come. Like, why would I not want to be here? Like, what is going on? And just had this, I couldn't shake it. This isn't a place for you to be. And I'm like, what? Like, what is my supervisor going to say when I get back? What am I, like, is this just my preference? Like, I just want to be home. Like, I don't really know anybody, so I'm feeling alone. Like, what in the world is going on here? So I call Jessica, and she kind of listens and talks me through it, and we agree that, yeah, if you're having that sense that you should go home, go ahead and come on home. And so I avoid conflict, and this was conflict to me, to walk downstairs and say, hey, I know you just gave me this key in this really cool little room that has a lamp in the corner, and and I give her the key and say, I'm sorry, I've actually got to go home. I've got to take off. Thank you, and I'm sorry I can't stay for the rest. And go ahead and drive home. So the whole time I'm like, what did I just do? Like, did I just ruin relations here? Like, again, what is my supervisor going to say? Like, I don't have an explanation. Like, I just had the sense that I shouldn't be here. And it wasn't like it was, like, satanic. Like, it was this church-organized event, gathering, collaboration type thing. And I still don't know. I still don't know what it was that I was supposed to not be there for. And I'm mostly, I think, okay with that. Still wonder if that lamp could have come home with me, but right, but sometimes we enter into these spaces and we can just think it's something and then we just feel manipulated. Anybody ever felt manipulated or swindled or tricked? This is not what I thought it was. What in the world do I do now? I am lost. What do we do? And I can't speak to your specific situation or what's coming to mind right now. And I do know that, unfortunately, that can happen in the church. We can present this amazing thing or this at least maybe so-so thing, and maybe it's attractive, and you're like, hey, yeah, I want to be a part of that. And we come in and we show up, and it's just not what we thought. Now they want me to stack how many chairs? They want me to run AV again. They put a microphone in my face and say, hey, will you sing a hymn? Thanks, John and Morris and Joyce. Right? And we get into the space of they're worried about the color of the carpet, and they're worried about how the pews feel, and they're worried about how many cameras are in the sanctuary. They're not worried about whatever's going on in my house, and they're not worried about what's going on in my home. They're not worried about how I'm handling my work because I can barely hold on. Right? So often what we can just do ourselves a disservice by not spending time with our people. And so what we do with corruption, maybe there's even false teaching, right? Maybe I go off on a tangent and I say something that's just not legit. Who's going to call me out on that? Who's supposed to call me out on that is probably Pastor Brock. But following that is our M&O, our ministry and oversight, our elder board. And maybe someone on that board, let's just say Dick Kinsley goes off and he goes crazy. And we as an M&O board, what in the world are we going to do about that? Do we set rules in place and say, Dick, this is the way you've got to handle it? Where's he at? He's back there. Like, he's here somewhere. And this is the way you're going to live now, Dick. And we're going to hold you to it. And if you don't, there's going to be some retribution. Right? We go to law. We go to punishment. We say corruption. I know as a parent, that's I'm finding, I'm learning how much of my default that is. All right, well, you're not going to do that. Well, here's what's going to happen to you. Is you're going to get a timeout, and if, oh, you don't want to go to timeout? Okay, well, what's the next step then from there? And what do we do with that? Kaylin's in the room. She doesn't know that I'm talking about her, though. Kaylin is feisty. She doesn't show it on Sunday mornings usually. She is a girl on fire. But so often, right, we go to law. This is the what I expect, and you're not going to do it. I'm going to hold you to it even more. I'm going to let you know that you have not held up to it. You've not held up to what I have set in place. I am the authority. You do what I say, and if not, we've got a problem. Does that sound enjoyable? Does that sound like a home you want to grow up in? Does that sound like a workplace that you really want to spend time in? Maybe. Maybe it is for some of you. I would venture to say probably not. I would venture to say, I don't really want to be a part of that family. Oh, I'm never going to that friend's house again, right? Who are those people? We know who those parents are. I'm learning how much of a parent I am in that way. And so what Paul talks about is he says, let's set straight our leaders. Let's set straight our leaders. And does our leader mean like our president? Does it mean our town board? Or are we all leaders in some way? Maybe it's over our own spirit. Scripture tells us that the spirit is subject to the human. And yet how do we submit to this Holy Spirit character that we're supposed to follow but we don't know who's speaking? Are we willing to refute that which is not true? Do we know what's not true? Do we actually know what our Bible says? I kind of do. I'm learning a whole lot. Right? But how do we set in place a way to do life? If we have this God that we follow, does he have anything to say? If he has anything to say, where do we find it? Probably in the Bible, probably through prayer, probably through the Holy Spirit. But do we actually believe what those say, or are we just say, well, that just doesn't fit in my way of life. That's just not how we do things here. That's just not a part of our community. That's just not a part of how we've done family. Okay. So you're just going to keep doing what you normally do, or do you want to see something different? I mean, that's what they're appealing to here for the Cretans, whether they're your sibling or they're in Crete. There's something different here. There's a different way I want you to do things. So I'll tell Kaylin, especially now that she's got a younger brother who's getting into her stuff. And I was showering this morning, and she's showing me her tennis shoes. That's an amazing shoe, girl. Show me another one. And Warren's just sitting out there. I don't even know what he's doing, but she doesn't like it. She says, no, brother, no. I'm like, Kaylin, take care of your brother. We guard him, we take care of him, right? Shower went a little faster. But teaching all that we have to do of the law, right? So we get into this law thing, and all right, if I'm going to read the Bible and that's what our source, am I supposed to then live it to a T? Well, if you look at the Bible, a lot of the people in the Bible didn't live it to a T. They're not really, I mean, many times we point to these heroes of the faith and they did these amazing things, but so much of their story is involved. Maybe they've got family stride. So they like Carolyn Thomas. Maybe it's something I'm willing and living in such a way my wife would have been about it that Jesus times I don't know where you are right. I don't. You can say that. You can say that. He can take it. And so that's where he encourages Titus. So Paul is writing to maintain a high standard of conduct, not just because we want to follow these rules, I'm going to hold you to them, but to say, hey, we've got a way that we're going to live. And men's group, we talked about this yesterday, right? How are we going to live? Are we going to live in the middle? Are we going to live to the legalism? Are we going to live to the standard of conduct in which he calls us to live free, to live with joy, to live with hospitality? So Ian, if you would, go ahead and throw up that first slide that has legalistic living on it. I tried to fit them all onto one screen. A little further along in one of the blue background ones. It's almost to the end, I think. Just keep powering through. I'll tell you when to stop. Just keep going. So we've got this legalistic living. There it is. He's got it. Ian, well done. Thank you, sir. I'm jumping all over the place. I apologize. Right, so this legalistic living is, and maybe that's a term that's just it's churchy and I'm throwing out there. Legalistic is just to live in such a way that you are following the law to the letter of it. That you are going to live in such a way that it's only focused on all of these pieces. And so the two I'm going to highlight for just a moment is that legalistic living often lacks empathy. I think it's the second one up there. Lacks empathy and understanding for individual circumstances. I don't care who you are or what you're doing. If you're going to show up in this church, you're going to dress this way. You're going to sit in this pew. You're going to handle things this way. I don't care how you feel about it. This is the expectation. Put on that freaking smile. And let's go into church, son. Let's go into church, honey. Let's go into church, whatever. Or if you're going to be in your home, as soon as I come in, I take my boots off, I expect whatever stereotype. As soon as I get home, I need the kids to not touch me for 30 minutes. There's room for that conversation, I suppose. Not in our home. I want to go get them right away. Right, and then we'll jump down to that fourth one. It may result in a sense of pride or superiority, right? So we get so twisted in our living because I have this authority. All right, if I'm the dad and the Bible says that I am the head of this family, that means that I set the way that this home is going to run. And when I uphold it, then that means I'm doing a dang good job. And when you're not, that means you suck. Can I say that up here? I wasn't touching the pulpit while I said it. I don't know if that... Right? But we live in this space of if I'm holding it up and I'm living out all the things that Jesus says, then that means that I'm better than you and you better get your tail in order. You got to figure this thing out. You've got to follow these rules, and if you don't, then I'm going to spank you. Is that the spirit that we believe this God is? Maybe. Maybe that's where you're at. I hope you know and hope you understand as we leave out of the space that that's not who he is. So let's jump to the next one, Ian. Nailed it. Nicely done. This high standard of living. And we'll focus here on two more as well, the third and the fourth. It allows for flexibility and decision-making based on the situation and the context. And so if I'm leading my home or if I'm leading a church family or if I'm leading in whatever context, is there room for feedback and is there room for decision-making? Am I leaving room for empowerment? Am I leaving room for someone to live fully in joy? Or am I living in such a way that they have to live under my dominion? Because we don't live in under our dominion. There's a dominion that I live under that I do not get to decide what happens. It's called the kingdom of God. And he gives me freedom to help run and reign and rule over that. And then the fourth one here, it promotes personal growth, empathy, and genuine relationships. I think that one pretty well stands out for itself. If we don't know how to do that, let's have a conversation. I don't know how to fix it for you. I need help with it. But can we help tweak some things? I know several of you in this room here today have shared with myself about how since you've been coming to church or you've been seeing shifts in faith, that you've seen changes in your spouses, in your family, in how you handle those situations. Maybe a little less anger, maybe a little less volume, maybe a little more tenderness. And yet also, is there room for some correction? How do we handle that together? To have a high standard of conduct, again, not just to live because this is the way we are to live, but this is the way we want to live together. And I know for me, growing up, I've got one more story and then we'll close. I know growing up, I had such a tendency to do what was expected, to follow the rules and the law of the home. Any parents think that would be terrible to have in a kid? Nobody. All right, well, that's how I grew up. And it wasn't even, I mean, my parents had certain expectations and rules and structures, and yet I was so locked up, I was so afraid, I was so full of fear and trepidation on who am I going to be? How am I supposed to live? What am I supposed to do? And I just assumed that I should just do whatever I was told. I should just do whatever was going to cause people to think good of me. I had such a desire to be right that anything besides rightness was not okay. And so I would see that fleshed out when I would be doing homework. I would see that fleshed out when I would go on the athletic field. I would see that when I would be behaving at school in whatever way. I would see that even to the point that even as a kid, I would play video games. And I would get so frustrated. I wasn't very good at video games. I would get so frustrated because I wasn't doing well, because that wasn't right. That wasn't the way to do it. But the next time I would try and do it the exact same way and it wouldn't work out my way. And anyway, I'd still get frustrated. And as I've gone through life, I'm just learning that I don't really get to be right very often. And am I okay with that? And I don't mean that towards Jessica. I know that where thoughts go as far as spouse relations. But am I willing to not be right so that I can be loved? There was a conversation this morning, and we prayed over it actually as well, of so often I try to love God, and I keep trying to love God, and I try to change how I handle life, and I continue trying to do my best, and I try to live with joy, and I keep finding myself just falling short, and I keep trying to love God. And it's a shift. But can we approach it from a different way and say, can I let God love me? Instead of trying to love God, can I let him love me? And could it be that that's more sustaining than anything we try and do? And so an example of that in my life, and we've got a video clip we'll show here. And when Jessica and I first moved to the area in 2018, Pastor Brock invited Jessica and I to go out and ride four-wheelers. And we didn't have our own, so we got to use some of theirs and also Mr. Bill Holder's. So thank you, Bill. But I was so told growing up that we weren't supposed to have four-wheelers. I grew up on a farm, but our mode of transportation was our legs or a bicycle. And getting from field to field on a bicycle takes a lot out of you. But maybe my parents were teaching me something. I don't know. But we just didn't ride four-wheelers. And even if you did, over at our cousin's house who lived just around the corner, you were wearing a helmet and you weren't driving. Well, I went and rode and I didn't wear a helmet, but I wasn't driving. And so I was so afraid of getting caught. I was so afraid of losing whatever freedom I did have. I was so afraid of even injury because my parents just had this fear that they were just not something we needed to spend time with. And there was this great uncle that we would go spend time with, and that was the only time I was allowed to drive, and all we could do was do a circle around his yard. And so we get to go, and not only am I riding, I'm driving, and I'm not just driving, I'm driving my own four-wheeler that I get to experience. So we'll roll the clip, and if just right before I take off, you might hear some words that I share.
Oh, he says, I want to back up, get a little bit more runway. Get you some.
This is so out of normal for me.
Yeah, grind it, get up there. Yeah, nicely done. With the girls watching.
Nailed it. You can cut it there, Ian. Yeah. And if you didn't catch it, what I yelled out there right before I took off from my runway, as Pastor Brock called it, I said, this is so out of normal for me. And in the moment, that's not usually something you want to yell out as like an encouragement to yourself. I'm going to go run this thing. I'm going to ride this four-wheeler through this mud pit, and it's going to be awesome. No, I said, this is so out of normal for me. In the moment, I knew it was dumb. And as I was prepping for today, I was like, I got to find the clip to prove I actually said this. This is so out of normal for me. And the point in showing that was not that I wasn't still afraid, because obviously I was, if that's what I'm yelling out right before I drive through this. I mean, we're not even talking inches of water. But it was a stretch, because I'm leaving behind my parents' expectations. I'm leaving behind, even in this moment, what my wife is thinking. I had no idea what the commentary was on the video from Pastor Brock, but I was leaving that behind. I was locked in on this four-wheeler and getting through this moment, because the last thing I wanted to do was to get it to the back end and hit that tree that was right there. This is so out of normal for me. And I want to hang on that to say, this is so out of normal, and it's a good thing that I'm stepping out of this place of fear and into this newness. And also, can we apply that to our lives and to say, this Jesus guy, this way of living, this newness that I'm feeling, even some of the lostness in it, this is so out of normal for me. And it's good. And so even as we look at next steps and playing the long game of life, go ahead and throw up that last slide there, Ian. I've got a couple different quotes here. I'm sorry, the one before it. What am I doing? Those are, again, real small. I tried to fit them all on one screen. And I'm not going to talk about them. I just want to put them up there. And maybe there's one that pops at you. Maybe there's one you would read and rewrite. And all of these are just quotes based off of Titus 1. And so if I look at that and think, if I don't want to live whatever's normal for me, what is going to be different? What's the change? What's the shift? What's that going to look like? What's it going to be? We can continue doing the same. Or am I willing to be transformed? Am I the one that has to do the transforming? Well, I know I'm the one that needs to change. And I know that I'm not real good at it. But I know someone who is. So that's the final question. And now the final slide, Ian, is how are we going to handle it? Are we going to handle it with reactionary law? Are we going to handle it with indifference? Whatever. I don't care. It doesn't matter, really. I'll deal with that when I'm 80. Or is it going to be intentional? I know some of you right now are making some life changes, and you've got to be more intentional. It requires more of you. This is Jesus' life. It does require more. Somehow there's a balance of requiring more, and yet we live in it free. And if you want to talk more about a life that is free, Let's get together. Let's grab coffee, grab lunch. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I'll probably get some hot chocolate or tea. Are we going to react? Are we going to be indifferent? Or are we going to be intentional? Campus Life students, thank you for being intentional to be here today. Thanks for answering that challenge, that call. Love that you've got an area, along with Pastor Scott right in the middle. It's good. Let's pray. God, is this morning just been different, and it's not been what I expected. It's gone in different directions, and it's good. So often I know we can get stuck in life worrying about what looks good, what's slick, what flows, what sounds good. And some of that can be learned. But you're after our character. You're after what matters. You're after our hearts and our minds to be renewed, to be changed. God, we ask for wisdom. We ask for strength. We ask for compassion. Would you move us into something that brings strength to someone else? May we endure through these hard times and believe that we still have faith in you, even when we feel manipulated or lost or tricked. God, we want to press into you. Don't leave us. Surround us. God, would you bless our schools and our students there as Taylor University and Indiana Wesleyan start having classes. Just give them encouragement. For our families and harvest that's beginning, and so that there's safety, there's patience. When things break down, because something's going to break down, we make that call. We say yes to something different. Not just because it's different, but because we know it's from you and we know it's good. Let us not be confused when someone comes to mind. It's not just a flippant thought. You've planted it there. Make the call. Make the trip. We love you, Lord. Amen. So we're so glad that you were with us today. You can subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or your preferred podcasting app. Be sure to rate us so other people can know about the podcast.